I'm Sarah Kelleher, and this is Psych in the City, a podcast about sexuality, relationships, and health. One psychotherapist, me, gives you the sex and psych education you didn't get in social work school, or most likely anywhere. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Psych in the City. My name is Sarah. I am the host of this podcast, and I'm really happy to be here. This is a recording and an interview that I did a long time ago that I am finally releasing. And I'm speaking today with Tabitha, who is a South Dakota-based illustrator whose work focuses on menstruation. Through her work, she hopes to promote period positivity and awareness in a fun, unique way. We discuss the bleeding basics as well as different types of products, the history of taxes on those period products, what is referred to as period poverty, what actually happens during menstruation, and much, much more. This episode aims to scratch the surface on menstruation and provide a little bit of the education surrounding bodies we all needed but did not get in health class. There are a ton of resources in the show notes. There's organizations, there's the research that we did. There's just a lot of information there that I encourage you to check out. So at the time of this recording, Tabitha and I discuss a couple of statistics and facts that are no longer accurate. Currently, there are 21 states that charge sales tax on period products as of June 20th, 2023. The sales taxes range from 4% to 7% in Indiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Five U.S. states, Alaska, Delaware, Montana, New Hampshire, and Oregon, do not have a statewide sales tax. However, in many states, cities and counties impose an additional local sales tax. People who menstruate require around 40 period products per cycle. The elimination of sales tax on these basic necessities helps all people who menstruate better afford period products. So we reference a couple of numbers in the recording that are no longer accurate. This is the updated stats. And there, like I said, there's a ton of advocacy work being done. AllianceForPeriodSupplies.org, in addition to other organizations, are doing incredible work. All of them are listed in the show notes.
Okay. So today I'm speaking with Tabitha, who is a South Dakota-based illustrator with a focus on the subject of menstruation. Through her work, she hopes to promote period positivity and awareness in a fun, unique way. Hello, Tabitha.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Tabitha, tell me a little bit about you. Why menstruation? Why? What do you do? What's your life? What's happening there?
All right, so I'll try to keep this like sort of summarized, but I guess we'll start off from just starting this whole Instagram channel or page, whatever you want to call it. So basically, I've always been into art and illustration and just drawing in general. It started with anime, It's kind of transformed into this. But I only recently was able to start and like have the want to start illustrating on digital instead of traditional mediums. So from pen and paper to laptop and stylus, and then post those on Instagram. So I wanted to practice the drawing itself. And in order to do that, I've been listening to different illustrators who also make it part of their business. And one thing they recommended doing was, you know, posting it somewhere, but also picking a few different categories. So an audience, if you had one, or a market you wanted to appeal to, or, you know, what service you offer kind of thing. Mm. And so from there, I was trying to think, who would I want to work for if I was able to do that, either on an illustration basis or an advertising graphic design basis, because that's more of my background is actually marketing. And so I chose to do menstruation in that whole category of products, because one thing I had noticed I had discovered shortly thereafter reusable period products, specifically Thanx underwear. And I thought it was so cool and also just so different. I had never heard or seen even the term of reusable products before. So it was very shocking that this was a thing in the United States that was almost honestly kind of glamorous too, but not really talked about. Mm. And everyone else in the period product industry that I had seen, like Always and all these big wig names have been around for ages, the disposables and everything, they are always doing the same things, like appealing to obviously women, but in a way that was, if you use our product, you'll be able to climb this mountain with no problem kind of thing. Obviously not super relatable for most people. I think most people are going to just want to be on the couch, like with a bag of chips or something. That's me included. So it's just the way they advertise things is so clean and so frou-frou at a lot of the time. It's not honest. It's not raw and relatable. I wish it had a bit more of that relatability, a more modern touch to it that some of these other products that are smaller and companies are smaller are coming out with. So that's why I chose that vertical. I just thought it was really cool. And it's just such an interesting one too, because you just don't hear much about it unless, I guess, you're in it, whether that be your administrator or you're, you know, advocating for changes and how we discuss things. So I wanted to go with that and explore it more. And I also love pink. So it kind of just like, oh, red and pink go together. You know, I want to keep create things with pink in it like all the time. So I was like, oh yeah, menstruation kind of goes with that because, you know, blood and whatever. so that's why I chose it, and like how it kind of developed was just from a wanting to illustrate digitally and get better at it. And I just chose those verticals in case I happened to get, you know, better at it and I wanted to attract customers or a community or something. I wanted to try to pick something that would be comfortable showcasing and also like interested in showcasing to keep up with it. Yeah. But like I said before, my background and what I went to school for originally was advertising, communication, marketing, that kind of vertical. And as I got out of that, I realized that I didn't want to do marketing anymore. I wanted to do more creative stuff. And I tried to go to graphic design, but I do like it, but then I just kind of focused more on illustration because that's where my first love is drawing. And if I was going to make a career change, that might not be something that pays well. I wanted to do something I absolutely loved, not something that was kind of halfway there, like graphic design would be. That's why I decided to move past that. And of course, right now, my daily life, I'm going back to school again. Now for dental hygiene, which is super different.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But the whole reason for that is because it pays really well and you only have to go to school for like usually 2 years, because that's what most people in that field have, is an associate's degree, and that's all they need to make like $70K a year. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to go back for that to make money on my day job and then like focus on art and things for my like side gigs and just to make me happy at the end of the day.
So really you're just doing this, completely as an additional project and for yourself and for others, you're not getting paid in any sort of way.
No, I actually did get paid for a project that is coming out, which it's with Join Ladybox on Instagram. So that's going to be coming out in February, I think.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is super cool. So I am open to doing freelance work, obviously. I'm trying to like pivot and like start with, hey, here's my work. I do cool stuff. And then people come to me and be like, oh, we want something. I'm like, cool, here's my rate, and like see if it works for them, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm playing both fields right now, just kind of seeing what happens and what makes me happy. I have all these like plans to do in the future, which may or may not happen. So I'm very much kind of nowadays trying to just go with the flow and, you know, literally and figuratively speaking, and just do what fulfills me at the end of the day and also maybe puts a little bit more something better into the world than where I left it with.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this. I've been wanting to do a period and menstruation talk specifically just because I feel like it is the epitome of, if you don't experience something, why care about it? And I feel like that's kind of how our culture handles periods and menstruation. Yeah. And for myself, you know, even with birth control, the fact that I had to go, you know, I've been on several types of birth control, and I only started to learn about them because I was having issues with the current ones that I was experiencing. And I, while researching for our show, I was looking at a bunch of like period memes and all that kind of stuff, which is like, research.
It's so good.
And there was one about, you know, the it's kind of famous, but like the Sally Ride when she was the first woman in space, and is 1,000 tampons going to be enough? And she was going up for like 6 days. And it's like, these are the best, these are quote unquote, the best minds that we have.
And they don't even know.
Someone made an illustration about it and it was just hysterical. Yes.
Oh my God.
Okay, so we did a lot of research for this, so I'm very excited. Yes. So let's go off with the absolute basics, because I feel like, again, it's one of those things where we talk about menstruation and we know what happens, you know, blood comes out and this is what, you know, but let's get down to the nitty gritty of what is a period, the basic period and flow. What is a period?
Okay, so put it to most basic terms, a period is when blood is released from the uterus and out through the vagina. I think we all know that part. It happens when the ovaries release hormones, estrogen and progesterone, which causes the lining of the uterus to build up and prepare for fertilized egg's attachment and development. But when an egg goes unfertilized, this lining breaks down and exits the body through the vagina in the form of blood. And there's also some other stuff mixed in there, but that's typically what we associate it with. Mm. And periods typically start around the age of 12, but it ranges. It can be a bit younger or a bit older, depending on the person. And then periods usually occur on a monthly basis and last for about a week, which is considered normal. One thing I like to think about or have heard that's a really funny way to kind of describe this is there's a person that's preparing for a guest. So like your body preparing for a baby, right? Mm. And they have all these nice pillows and they're all red, of course. But whenever the guest doesn't come over, whenever that baby doesn't fertilize and develop, that person gets really, really upset and starts throwing pillows and just trashing the whole room. And that's why the blood comes out. All these pillows just come out, right? And then the next month, they're over it. They're like, okay, well, maybe this month that visitor will come and I'll make it all pretty again and get it ready. But then maybe it doesn't happen and the cycle starts again. But that's just a funny little way to think about it.
right. So what actually happens during a cycle is that during each menstrual cycle, an egg develops and is released from the ovaries. The lining of the uterus builds up, and if a pregnancy does not occur, the uterine lining sheds during a menstrual period, and then the cycle starts again. So when you go to the doctor's office, sometimes they'll ask you, like, when was your last menstrual period? They're asking about the first day that you started bleeding. That's what they're referring to. So the menstrual cycle is categorized into four phases, and the length of each phase can differ from person to person, and it can change over time. The menstrual phase is considered the first stage of the menstrual cycle, and it is what we call, you know, when you get your period, the bleeding. So this is the bleeding part. Mm-hmm. This phase begins when an egg from a previous cycle is not fertilized. So like you said, the preparing of the pillows, you know, like the pillows.
The room is getting nice. And it has a bed, has the pillows, has a nice wallpaper.
Pregnancy has not taken place, and levels of the hormones, estrogen and progesterone drop. The lining of the uterus has thickened, preparing for a pregnancy, but because it is no longer needed, it sheds through the vagina. So the period blood is a combination of blood, mucus, and tissue from the uterus. The average menstrual phase of the cycle is for 3 to 7 days, which again, this is very person to person.
Yes.
The follicular phase starts on the first day of your period. So there is overlap with the menstrual phase. This phase ends when you ovulate. It starts when the hypothalamus sends a signal to your pituitary gland to release follicle-stimulating hormone, FSH. This hormone stimulates ovaries to produce around 5 to 20 small sacs called follicles. Each follicle contains an immature egg. And I know this is very sciencey and technical, but I just think it's really interesting. And actually, because when we talk about this stuff, we're like, oh, you're on your period. And it's like, but what does that actually mean? And I think it is helpful to know this stuff because for me, I actually just started to track my cycle.
Yeah, same. I've started again.
Well, I am now no longer on birth control. And so I've started, I've started to track it. And you know, the app, which I use is Flow, and it sends me little stuff about, you know, this is when you're going to start ovulating. This is when you're going to start doing this. And I'm like, oh, like it just is really, I just didn't know. I feel like I know a lot about this stuff and it turns out I know nothing. And
oh, so, I know, right?
so it's just interesting. So each follicle, you know, 5 to 20 small sacs called follicles, each follicle contains an immature egg. Mm-hmm. Only the healthiest egg will eventually mature. On rare occasions, a person may have two eggs mature. The rest of the follicles are actually then reabsorbed into the body. The maturing follicle sets off a surge in estrogen that thickens the lining of the uterus. This creates a nutrient-rich environment for an embryo to grow. The average follicular phase lasts for about 16 days, and it can range from 11 to 27 days, depending on the person's cycle. The ovulation phase. Rising estrogen levels during the follicular phase trigger your pituitary gland to release luteinizing hormone, LH.
You got it.
This is what starts the process of ovulation. Ovulation is when the ovary releases a mature egg. The egg travels down the fallopian tube toward the uterus to be fertilized by sperm. The ovulation phase is the only time during a menstrual cycle when you can get pregnant. You can tell that you're ovulating by symptoms like these few examples: a slight rise in your body temperature, thicker discharge that has the texture of egg whites. Ovulation usually happens at around day 14 if you have a 28-day cycle. Again, this is something that changes person to person, which is why I just started to track mine. And I'm noticing that I always thought my cycle was 28 days. Turns out it's not. Right. Oh, wow. In the middle of your menstrual cycle. It lasts for about 24 hours. After a day, the egg will die or dissolve if it is not fertilized. The luteal phase, after the follicle releases its egg, it changes into the corpus luteum. This structure releases hormones, mainly progesterone and some estrogen. The rise in hormones keeps your uterine lining thick and ready for a fertilized egg to implant. If you do get pregnant, oh no, your body will produce human chorionic gonadotropin, yeah. HCG. This is the hormone pregnancy test detect. So this is actually when, if you take a pregnancy test, this is what it is trying to detect. Oh, cool. It helps maintain the corpus luteum and keeps the uterine lining thick. If you do not get pregnant, the corpus luteum will shrink away and is again reabsorbed. That's cool. This leads to decreased levels of estrogen and progesterone, which causes the onset of your period. The uterine lining will shed during your period. During this phase, if you don't get pregnant, you may experience symptoms of premenstrual syndrome. This can include, you know, the common ones that we know: bloating, chest swelling, pain or tenderness, mood changes, headache, weight gain, changes in sexual desire, food cravings, trouble sleeping. The luteal phase lasts for 11 to 17 days. The average length is 14 days. So have you gained a lot of research from your illustrations and having to write about your illustrations and that?
Oh man. Yeah. Long story short, there we go. I was like, what is that stupid saying? I always forget. I'm like, my dad, like, we never remember the exact saying, and my mom's always correcting us. Anyway, but yeah, I knew some of this, like the very basic stuff, that I think most people talk about, like, you know, on day-to-day basis. But a lot of the science-y stuff, as we've mentioned before, yeah, I had like no idea before I started researching. And I might have had like a very like basic idea, like, oh, okay, I know there's like different phases. I don't remember the names, but yeah, I know I get horny at like this kind of phase maybe. So it was very basic stuff, but yeah, definitely through my illustrations, specifically the ones that are, I label them like my blog posts, just because those are the ones that I have like the longest descriptions for, that actually have like research and science packed into it. And those ones usually don't have like a very like, what did I say? Usually aren't character illustrations. They're just like a word of whatever I'm discussing, or like some shapes and stuff to help illustrate that. They're very simple. But yeah, for those ones specifically, I've had to do a lot of research for it. But it's great though. I really have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Just get more knowledge, and also to help people that might not know at all, because, you know, I grew up in a household, like, my mom was very open with things, but of course, like, you're not going to get to the nitty gritty science stuff necessarily, but I knew the basics. And from school, I don't remember learning anything, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
We could have, and I might have just ignored it because I was like, oh, I know this already, so I'm not going to pay attention.
Right.
Or, you know, we could have had a very basic, this is what it is, because I do remember at one point the boys and girls were separated, but I don't know if we discussed periods during that time and how in-depth it was. So even the education system that I had wasn't great. And I know it's the same for a lot of people. So I'm just trying to help out a little bit, even though this isn't my background at all. Like, I don't have a degree in teaching or a degree in like health education or science or anything like that. I'm just trying my best to research with like good articles and things like that to help people out.
Yeah. And I think I just think it's interesting how in American culture, we value pregnancy so heavily.
Oh my God, yeah.
But then we demonize a very I mean, the thing that is most associated with it, which is menstruation. And so it's, you know, we never talk about it. Like, why would you necessarily seek out that information if you think it doesn't apply to you?
Oh, exactly. And that happens for like a lot of guys, guys and everything that I've talked to, like my husband, even like, he'll go on sometimes because he has Instagram too. So he'll go on like something sometimes on my page, which just makes me feel really happy. But but like sometimes I'll be like, oh yeah, this like also is important to you. But he might be like, but why? I'm like, okay, this is like kind of a philosophical discussion I can't get into right now, but it should be important to you. Like, even if it doesn't directly affect you, this goes for like any kind of social or political or any kind of topic really.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't directly affect you. You should still, you know, have at least some kind of awareness about it and be able to, I guess, understand it to an extent, right?
Of course,
and
so yeah.
That way you can like be empathetic or sympathetic to people's situations. And also that just gives us like a greater worldview as well, which I definitely think is very important, especially in these times.
Right, of course, absolutely. So, okay, next, what affects flow?
Okay, so there are a lot of different things out there that aren't super well known, but I'm just gonna go over the basic stuff that has been proven to alter it, just the things I know off the top.
Right.
You know, have science and information to back it up, which are age. Obviously, if you're young or very old, you're not going to have a period or it's going to be affected greatly. The stress levels you have, which I definitely have this issue. Poor sleep is a big one. Mm. Birth control, which is obvious, but it's one of those things that's on purpose. It's not necessarily like, oh, I have poor sleep. I'm not trying to sleep poor. I'm trying to actually control something, right?
Right.
Body weight, this goes from if you're too thin or if you're overweight to a degree, it can affect it. Rigorous exercise, so extremely exercise and things like that. I think even marathon runners, like people who are really into it, not just like unhealthful exercise, even if they're super healthy, doing like very strenuous activities, it can affect it. Yeah. And then the medical conditions you might suffer. So I think endometriosis is one thing that does affect your flow, for example.
Right. You know, we're getting you the basics of, you know, period products, of period in general, but there are so many, there's so much to know. We can't cover it all.
Yeah.
but I work with young people, and a lot of times people will ask me about, what do my certain color means? Is this normal, quote unquote? And so, you know, this color, what does this color mean? What does that color mean? Is this okay? Is something happening? So do people experience different colors? What does it mean?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So the short answer, yes, people do experience different colors. And some of these colors I'm going to go over, I think there's been other articles that come out and they've even extended this, but like before, this is the ones I'm most comfortable with presenting to people because I know these ones are like correct. They have the most research, most like information on it. And it's such a weird range, but so I'll go over the colors first and go back into it and like the different signs. And all of these ones are going to have like, or most all of them are going to have like a positive sign and then a negative associated, like most medical conditions do. It's either you're super healthy or you're dying, right? So first of all, let's go over the colors. The colors can range from bright red, brown or dark red, pink, orange, gray, or black. And so let's start from the top with the bright red and what it means. Mm. So the front part of that, the positive part, which is the most likely scenario of why you have bright red blood, if you're menstruating, it's fresh blood and indicates a steady flow. Rarely, and I want to emphasize this, very rarely, this is a sign of cervical cancer. The brown or dark red is the beginning or end of a period. And then the opposite side of that, like we'll say the more negative side for this, it could be an early sign of pregnancy. Pink period is when the period blood is mixed with cervical fluid, typically could also indicate lower estrogen levels due to hormonal birth control, because it could indicate significant weight loss, an unhealthful diet, or anemia. Mm. And then orange has period blood also, it can also indicate period blood mixed with cervical fluid, but it could also be an indicator of a possible infection, which I've never had orange blood before, which is very interesting. And then gray is the one that's like just bad all over. If you have gray, please go to a medical professional and get that checked out, because that can be bacterial vaginosis, which is a condition that occurs due to an imbalance between beneficial and harmful bacteria in the vagina.
Mm.
And then black, this one I also have had before quite a bit.
Yes.
It's the beginning or end of a period. But it can also sometimes be a sign of vaginal blockage, but typically it's going to be the beginning or end. I think most people have probably experienced it with a period where you're going to the end of, or the beginning. But for me, it's typically the end where it's just like black gunk coming out at that point, or brown gunk, you know? But
well, I mean, the colors of my flow absolutely changes depending on where I am. I've had gray, I've had black. BV is not fun. And I will post, just for everyone's reference, I will post all of the, there's extensive research. I will post all of it in the podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot in there, guys.
Yeah. So your art, or the illustrations that I've seen on your page, they talk a lot about products, period products.
Yes.
And there are so many products out there. I mean, not that many actually, but there are many out there, depending on preference, depending on what feels the best to people. Yeah. So talk to me about the different types of period products.
All right. So there's two categories for these. And technically there's honestly a third. On my page, I did three separate blog posts for these. I started with disposables, the most common, the ones you just throw away, then reusables. And then I did a third one, which we won't be discussing here, but I did uncommon solutions, which range from bleeding with no products to using sponges, which I don't recommend, but that's an option as something people do.
Why don't you recommend that?
So the reason why is because, first of all, they're not sure how clean it is, because sea sponges were living beings or living organisms at one point. They collected dirt and sand inside of them. So it might not be super healthy. Could be bacteria in there that we can't get rid of that you're placing in your vagina. And then also, what was the other thing? I think that was the main thing. It was just the bacteria. They're not sure about that, how clean it can be. I go over this in my blog post. I had, I think, a couple more examples of why it wasn't super a good idea to do. But that was the main one. And then there's people on the other side that have used it and they think they're great, and, you know, more power to you. But for me personally, I just wouldn't recommend using something like that personally.
Okay.
But yeah, so let's start with the disposable period products. These are the ones that most people use, at least started off with. And like I said before, they're the ones that you throw away after a single use. So pads, tampons, and even menstrual discs. So the basic overall pro to disposables is they're easy to dispose of. You don't have to worry about taking it off, washing it. You just throw it away after you use it. And then also these are cheaper, have a cheaper upfront cost than the reusables do. However, disposable products aren't eco-friendly, which is the biggest negative of it. And partially why it's not eco-friendly is because of the amount of plastic in the products, which is overwhelming. It's really surprising when you look into it, how much plastic is actually in these things. And also how often it's used by how many people. So in North America, for example, close to 20 billion sanitary napkins, tampons, and applicators are sent to landfills every year. So that's a huge chunk of just trash entering it, which we already have issues with it. So this is definitely not helping. additionally, even though the initial cost is cheaper than reusable, it does add up when you have to keep buying it and restocking it multiple times throughout the year. So that's something to consider. If you are able to invest in something that lasts longer, it's probably going to be a better idea. But let's just go over, I guess, the three basic disposables, which I mentioned a little bit previously. Pads, which are probably the thing most people are going to start off with. I've started off with them. I kept using them until I switched to reusables. Tampons, obviously, and menstrual discs. What's our new one that have come up recently, I think. The biggest thing with menstrual discs that's a pro is it's the biggest thing they have is mess-free period sex. You can wear these and have sex and no problem. And then also they're supposed to minimize cramps and then have longer wear time. And they also produce less waste than pads and tampons, even though they are still technically a disposable product. Yeah. So any questions there so far?
You made an incredible chart, which
I'm looking at it. I'm like, what should I include in this?
I will be posting. I will be making a little graphic. It's so amazing.
Thank you.
And it's really informative. You did so much research for this, and I really appreciate it.
No problem.
You actually really inspired me because I was like, wow, she's so organized. I was like, okay, I gotta get on my game. So what about reusable period products, which I think are less used?
Yes. Definitely. Of the two, those are definitely like the less used, but I think they're starting to come out and make more headlines, which is great. So the biggest thing, as the name implies, reusable period products are reused multiple times. The biggest pro of reusables are its eco-friendliness and also its cheaper cost in the long run due to its longevity. Mm. Also, from a quick Google search, which I found, I didn't know this beforehand, but reusable products can last between 6 months to a year, but they can also last much longer depending on the proper care. Mm. So I've seen like some claims on websites saying like this menstrual cup will last like for years. I'm like, holy crap, that's crazy, which is honestly awesome. Like I think they're like, you can use this for upwards of like 3 to 5, maybe even 10 years. I'm like, what? Mm. Oh my Lord.
Yeah.
so anyway, but even if the upfront cost is more expensive, that's the biggest downfall of it. So a lot of people are scared off by the initial cost. Like I think for one cup, typically you're going to pay for anywhere from like $30 to $50. So for one product. Of course, you do get multiple uses out of that in more lifetime. So it is actually better, but that does scare off quite a few people that maybe can't afford it, or even people who can, but maybe just aren't sure about making the jump yet. Because it's so ingrained to us to just throw it away, to get rid of it, to all the evidence, just don't see it kind of thing. But yeah, so the other thing is, that is the other downfall, or not downfall, but I guess a con of this reusables is that you do have to clean it and upkeep it after each use. So that can get a little tricky. For reusables, if you do have a heavy flow, say you're using a reusable pad, for example, and you have to change it, you will probably have to carry around a little baggie with you to put that in so you can go home later and wash it. But, you know, not everyone has a bag on them to put that in and then put that bag inside of another bag, you know, to hide it. So that's just something to think about, which I think for me anyway, I haven't really thought about it because it just hasn't come up yet. But that's one of something that's something to consider. But let's get into the actual products that fall into this category. So the main ones are menstrual underwear, which is just a pair of undies that have scientific great tentacle like material built into it that's moisture wicking, that is odor reducing, things like that to help absorb period blood in it. It's supposed to be very comfortable and I can't wait to invest in some. then we have menstrual cups, which are probably honestly, menstrual cups are the face of reusable period products. Like you
agreed.
See so much more than anything else. Like it's so funny. Like people, it's such a funny like line too, because I feel like people who use menstrual cups are usually really nice, but there are some that are very like, oh, you don't use a menstrual cup? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, okay. Let's just get off of that. Let's get off your high horse there, you know, whatever. and then going down from that, the less, I would say they're still used probably. I don't know if they're used as much as menstrual cups, but I love them. And these are my personal favorites right now are reusable pads. Just like a pad, but usually it has like a little button or something on the underside to secure it to your underwear instead of like a sticky strip. And then you just bleed right into that. And usually they're made with great moisture wicking fabrics and technology and all that jazz. So it's honestly, I found them to be a bit more comfortable than regular pads too, just because I guess it's more like sitting in cloth, like underwear versus sitting in like a diaper, you know? So it's just, it feels better on the badge. And then lastly, which is something I've only recently discovered, reusable tampons exist, which is super cool. Not just the applicators, which you can buy reusable applicators and like use disposable tampons if you want. That's another option you can do to be a bit more eco-friendly. But yeah, even the whole tampon can also be reused, which I think it's basically like just like a fabric almost that on a string, and you just pop that in there and then you squeegee it out afterwards and wash it and then you're good to go. But those, I think, are the newest ones that aren't really talked about yet.
What comes up for people when they're saying, this is unsanitary, I don't want to use these? I think there's a big concern that this is unsanitary or it's too annoying. Yeah. What would your response be to that?
So I've seen a lot, like, especially on like Facebook advertisement posts with like menstrual underwear, for example. Like you always see those people on there that are like, oh, this is so gross. It's like, how this can't be sanitary. And it's like, obviously you didn't go on the website and read the research behind this, because you'll find that it actually is. And they explain why it is. Like, come on now. So definitely do your research and look into it. But another thing I would say is, you know, there's people out there like from our past, but also currently who've had to use things that like just bleeding into underwear, for example, or using rags and things like that. Obviously those aren't the best solutions and aren't super sanitary, but we have been doing that for a while. And now the good thing is with menstrual underwear, even though it does seem to some people like, oh, I'm just waiting at underwear, you're not. There is a fabric in there. It's basically like a built-in pad almost, but way more comfortable from what I'm aware, what I can see on the example mock-up underwears and things like that. Mm. So it has all this stuff built into it. So it's not like you're just free bleeding into something. You do have that protection there.
Reusable products last longer, can be worn longer, and are eco-friendly.
Yes, exactly. So those are the biggest three.
Okay, so period poverty.
Oh boy.
What is period poverty for people that don't know that term, what is it? The general idea of it.
So typically when people think of period poverty, I think they think of just not being able to afford something like period products or, you know, that, but it's so much more than that. But to give you a general definition, period poverty is more than just not being able to afford period products. It also encompasses a lack of access to these products, menstruation education, restrooms, and waste management. So all those things encompass period poverty. And I think I did a post on this as well in the beginning, just to kind of go over it. And there's a lot more you can cover. But another thing to consider with period poverty is that it doesn't just affect people who are menstruate, but it also affects people who might be caregivers and menstruators. It affects everyone, whether you know it or not. It does affect you in some way. Mm. Oh, before we get into that, I just want to mention to the whole like period poverty topic I think while we're researching this, or maybe before that happened, but Scotland was the first to pass period products being free for everyone, which is a crazy step in that direction. And it's crazy that, you know, we're all still waiting to see like how it affects them and like how it goes. So maybe other countries might have something similar, a similar kind of solution to it. But that is like, I think the biggest example of how you can end period poverty or fight it is just like by making things free, which there's different arguments to why you should or shouldn't do something. But
right.
I just want to include that here, that it's a very interesting, a very interesting change.
That Scotland was the first to reduce the tampon tax. And it's really exciting. And it's something that every country should be following. Okay. So the tampon tax. The tampon tax at its base, most basic, the term tampon tax describes the fact that in 35 US states, period products are not considered essential and are subject to a luxury tax, AKA a value added tax or a sales tax. So, and just to clarify, this isn't a unique tax for tampons or other period products. It's the same tax other products that are not considered basic necessities are subject to. So the history behind it, during my research for this, I actually found an article from The Atlantic that speaks to the history of the tampon itself. And I actually found it quite interesting. Since the invention and improvement of tampons, they have been labeled and traded off for one category for another. And in the United States, tampons were originally labeled as cosmetics for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration purposes, which could potentially explain some of the reason for their status as luxuries today. I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I think misogyny has to do with this, that Probably. Tampons are, you know, I think misogyny has to do with this. I think lack of access for people that menstruate in general. I think that, again, it goes into the, you know, North American approach of let's not just talk about this stuff. I think it all feeds into that. I think that, yes, it could potentially explain, you know, when this product was invented, you know, I understand that there may have been confusion surrounding it, but I think it is way late. You know, I think it's clear they're not a luxury. Right. In 1976, Congress changed the classification of tampons under the umbrella of medical devices for purposes of consumer labeling laws. So this change, ironically, exempts manufacturers from having to label ingredients and materials that tampons are made of, which is a whole other discussion, but
yeah, it's super scary.
Yeah, but basically, if a product is categorized under medical devices, they don't have to list the ingredients,
And so now that, you know, in an effort to, I guess, make tampons considered not a luxury, which should have been a good thing, because tampons are under the umbrella of medical devices, they no longer have to list the ingredients and materials that tampons are made of, which is scary. Yeah. Yeah. There is not much on why a tampon tax exists, but this article, you know, proposed that the tampon tax has gone unnoticed until recently, primarily, you know, which what we were discussing, because of a history of cultural and frankly legal unease about vulvas, particularly menstruation. And in 2016, a YouTuber asked President Obama for his views on the tax. I just thought this was an interesting part, which he explained as resulting from women's historic absence from legislation. Mm-hmm. Researchers agree that this is like partially true, but that the lack of attention to sales tax imposed on menstrual hygiene products has roots actually in misperceptions about menstruation itself. Okay. And male misconceptions and legislative reclassifications raise, you know, again, interesting questions about the core of Western cultural attitudes toward menstrual products, but it doesn't explain the origin or confusion, or it's frankly the disinterest. And so basically when the product came out, people were confused. It's like, how do we categorize this? And basically every product that comes out on the market is categorized in one way or another every single thing that's invented. It is then put under a category of the type of product that it is. And then that categorization then influences how it's sold, how it's marketed, how all of those types of things. And so because of its mislabeling, that's kind of why maybe it is considered a luxury. There's much more to this, but in the sake of time, through legal action and advocacy and by rallying a vocal community, there are many people and organizations that are working on this and that are working to eliminate the tampon tax in all 50 states. And I think that it's important to, you know, recognize that how this affects people on an individual level. And it's like, okay, cool. It's like $3 in sales tax, but it's actually much more than that. And it's actually, you know, it says that the average person who menstruates would estimate to use more than 16,000 tampons in their lifetime.
Yep.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so again, I do think it's a larger conversation surrounding how we view menstruation, vulvas, people who menstruate in general, and how, you know, and I think, you know, to President Obama's statement of like, oh, it's because women and people who menstruate have been left out of have been historically left out of the places where these laws are decided. That also speaks to the overall problem.
Exactly. And it's not just being left out like physically, but also just totally like out of the mind as well. It's like, oh, these don't affect like people, like at that point, women or people who menstruate, like that, even just saying people who menstruate has become such a like a new thing for society, you know, at least Western society, we'll say. We're obviously not there yet with everyone.
Right.
It's definitely a big issue.
Yeah, totally. So this might need to be like an 8-part episode just because there's so many things.
There are, and there's so much stuff. Like, we're just seeing the surface of this too. So
the
like,
surface,
so much, like in-depth like research you can go into. Like there, and there's also things you go to that's like, okay, here's the, like the scientific evidence or like the facts of this topic. But then you could also go to the other direction and be like, okay, here's like the philosophical like information of why this might be the case. Like, for example, why periods are seen as taboo nowadays. I could go root back from why, like a misunderstanding from the very beginning of humans, like, oh, blood equals bad because it means you're hurting. So obviously whenever you're menstruating, it's bad. And then maybe why in some religious contexts in books, they see, or they wrote as periods being a bad thing, a negative thing. And then that, maybe that stigma carried over to the 21st century and just kept going because there's not understanding amongst everyone of what a period is. And I think that kind of plays a role in why it's still such a taboo topic.
So let's talk about some of the myths and bullshit that we hear surrounding period menstruations, which a lot of people, I think, going through puberty and growing up experience, because it is so demonized. Yes. And so let's go into that. Myth number one, period blood is dirty.
So false. Mic drop. There we go. Blood is no dirtier than blood from a scraped knee or blood found in your veins. It's like all the same stuff. The only thing that's different is that there are some extra stuff because it is uterine lining. So there are some extra things in there, but it doesn't mean it's unclean or anything like that. And the other statement to that is we may never truly know why this common misconception exists. However, it seems that it's driven by a lack of knowledge and understanding, and they stem from how religious texts describe periods as being unclean, which I briefly noted before. And it also seems that this helped carry the stigma into the 21st century by way of period product marketing, i.e. feminine hygiene products, instead of just period products. There are feminine hygiene products. So obviously something's not as unhygienic if you had to have something to help the hygiene of the state of that thing.
It's cultural. It's philosophical.
It's sociological. Like, oh my God, it's so much stuff.
It's so much. And, you know, the next myth feeds into, you know,
oh my God,
purity culture. Yes, you know, tampons will break your hymen and make you impure. And the truth is that, unfortunately, you know, the whole, unfortunately, among cultures and communities, there is still a common misconception, I would say almost everywhere, about the hymen, along with tampons and other types of inserted menstrual products.
Yeah.
And that the truth is, first of all, hymens don't look a certain way. People can not have hymens, have hymens that are already, they look a million different ways. Yeah. And that tampons are small enough to leave a hymen intact when used properly. And also, it's important to note that virginity is a social construct, as is purity. And that health professionals, people that know about this stuff, insertable period products have nothing to do with the concept of virginity, nor how intact a hymen is. There are many ways a hymen can look. And
there's many ways a hymen can be broken too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like my mom, for example, I'm just going to throw her under the bus here, but I think she's fine with it. She like broke her hymen on an accident when she was a kid because her sister and her were on a teeter totter, and her sister jumped off and like just left her going really high and like sent her flying down. So she broke her hymen like that, apparently.
Yes. And even there was talk about how, I mean, this just again goes into purity, you know, purity about how, I mean, there was, I think people historically, women were told that they shouldn't ride bikes.
Oh my gosh.
Because,
yeah, horses, right?
Yeah. Because they could orgasm or that, or something. And just all that kind of stuff just feeds into this obsession with purity culture and how that if your hymen is broken, you are no longer a virgin, which A, virginity is a social construct. B, hymens can be broken all different ways / hymens can be born, not that, you know.
Yeah, there's so many things like the thing that we all need, like, I think understand is that there's no one way to assess someone's quote-unquote virginity or purity, and hymen is definitely not the way to do that, even though it's been placed upon it. Even doctors, they're like, this is not an indication of virginity or purity or anything, because it's so different among so many different people and there's so many factors that can influence it. So it's just no point, honestly, at the end of the day.
Myth number three, you can't take a bath or swim or be in water when you are menstruating.
So super interesting one. So I think this one's not super common in the West, but because we have tampons and insertable products that help create that barrier so we can just do whatever we want pretty much. But just so everyone knows, you can still enjoy a bath or swimming while on your period. However, using a tampon, cup, or disc is recommended to use when swimming, just so you're not bleeding out in the water and affecting anyone nearby or the water in general.
Myth number four, it is unhealthy to exercise or to be active while you're menstruating. No. Exercising while menstruating can be actually very beneficial. Regular exercise can even help decrease painful cramps or some symptoms of menstruation, depending on what those are. Myth number five, this is an important one. You cannot, you can't have sex or get pregnant while on your period.
Yeah. So, other than societal stigma, there's no reason why you can't have sex while you're on your period. In fact, orgasms cause uterus to contract and release, which brings some relief from menstrual cramps, painful ones, obviously. However, you can still get pregnant if you have unprotected sex when menstruating. This is unlikely, but it's a possibility as sperm cells can live inside a vagina for up to 5 days. So just keep that in mind, everyone. Please be safe. don't want a baby.
Yes, yes. If yeah, exactly. Myth number six. I love this. PMS isn't real. It's just an excuse to be overly emotional.
Oh my God.
Premenstrual syndrome, PMS, is very real. According to many health sites, mood changes surrounding this condition have been described as early as the time of the ancient Greeks. In 1931, PMS was officially recognized by the medical community, which, while is helpful, does also not necessarily mean that it's now, okay, it's real. But it is real. Then the term premenstrual syndrome was coined in 1953. And here are some facts about PMS. From womenshealth.gov. As many as 3 in 4 people say they've experienced mild PMS symptoms. Less than 5% of menstruators experience a severe form of PMS called PMDD, which is characterized by sudden and severe mood swings. While PMS does include emotional symptoms, there are physical symptoms as well, like fatigue, bloating, chest tenderness, etc. This varies again between person to person, and it can change over time. Growing up, I was a person that was like, oh, like I don't have PMS. I think people are exaggerating. Now as an adult, it presents very differently, and I can absolutely feel a shift my physical, emotional, psychological state. And that's not to say, you know, common jargon that I can't be trusted during those times. It is that I am just experiencing something that is not my baseline state. Exactly. And I think that this is, and I think that, you know, there's this conversation of, I mean, the infamous, you know, women on their periods then can't be president because like they would be making these irrational decisions. Yeah. People that menstruate go through the world as if they are not menstruating 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's not true that people cannot be trusted. Yes, emotions are fluctuating just as every other person. Yeah. Existing. And I think that's a very problematic myth.
For sure.
Very problematic.
It's even more problematic how many people still believe it. Yes. And it's like, why? Like, are you kidding me? Like, it's just one of those things that they obviously don't hear themselves, I think, because it sounds so stupid.
right. Absolutely. And So myth number seven, period syncs up with other menstruator cycles. Want to go for that one?
Yeah, I do. This one's really interesting. And I'm going to make a whole post about it later, but until I get there, because it's going to be a while. While this is a possibility, a recent study by Clue and Dr. Alexander Alvernay from the University of Oxford found that it's very unlikely. And when it does happen, it may just be a random coincidence more than something that's going to happen every time, something that's factual, I guess. And then I want to just quote them by saying this: living together did not increase the likelihood of syncing. 37% 100 out of 273 of the pairs with diverging cycles pairs with diverging cycle start dates live together, compared to 24%, 19 out of 79 of those who with converging cycle start dates. So basically they found that more people, even if they lived together, it didn't increase their chance of cycling together versus, you know, a smaller percentage that actually it happened. So the science is still kind of out on whether or not this is the case, but right now it seems to be more of just like an unlikely coincidence than anything else.
Right. Whew. Okay. Myth number eight, period lasts exactly 1 week and start at the same time each month. Truth. Periods vary. They usually last for 5 days, but again, it can be shorter or longer, and it can change month to month due to hormones, stress levels. Variations in menstrual cycles are common. Mm-hmm. And there are two times when it's it's usually considered that there are two times when it's totally normal for your period to be irregular: when it first begins and when menopause starts. And also, I mean, think about the daily stress that we are handling on a daily level. Variations in menstrual cycles is very common. If you are of menstruating age, it is to note that if you completely do not have a period and you are on some form of birth control, if you are not on some form of birth control and you don't have a period at all, that is a cause for concern. Yeah. It could mean, I know when I was very underweight, I did not have a period. And that was one of the big tells of that, wow, something's going on.
Right.
So yeah, it is very person to person. That's why tracking is a kind of a cool thing, because it can help you learn more about your cycle, your particular cycle, which is not the same as every, you know, exactly. I think there's a lot of like, again, common kind of like talk about how like, oh, like the 1 week when everyone's crazy. And it's like, that's not what it is.
That's the full moon, you know, the first full moon of the year. Yeah. It's not this like crazy mythological thing that happens. It's very scientific. And even though it's very scientific, it's not the same for everyone. Like it's
absolutely,
like, it fluctuates. It's very different. So along life, you're going to find there's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of fluctuation with things.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, totally. Okay. Myth number 9.
The funnest one ever.
The smell of period blood attracts bears and sharks.
I love this one so much. I just think of like Dwight Schrute whenever I hear the word bears, honestly, from The Office. So I just love it.
Of course.
So as funny as it sounds, it's not true. According to NPS.gov, there's no evidence that bears are overly attracted to menstrual odors more than any other odor, and there's no statistical evidence that known bear attacks have been related to menstruation. Also, on the JakartaPost.com, it mentions a report by Popular Science, which states that period blood actually does not attract sharks. So, fun fact for all you guys.
Yeah, I mean, good to know about that. And it's... you know, and I think there are so many more myths.
Oh my God, there's so many
problematic language surrounding menstruation. And these are just some of them. And again, this was like a bait, you know, 101 for people to begin to learn about menstruation, and more like the science behind it, more about the history of policies surrounding it, the basics, you know, period and flow, and how it's nothing to be ashamed of. It is a scientific, you know, it is a natural occurrence. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Tabitha, anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want to say? We've covered a lot. It's been a lot of information. Oh my gosh. where can we find you, your work, any places that you want to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So the only place you can find me right now is on Instagram, at period underscore prophetess. I'm sure will be linked somewhere anyway. But yeah, yes, just definitely go check me out there. If you like what I do, please, you know, give a follow, give some likes. They're free, so please give them.
Right.
I always like to create new things. So I'm trying to grow the community to 1,000 by the beginning of February, which I think we're on track to get there, but definitely please come and support and come check it out and be part of the conversation. We, you know, it's an open community. I like to keep it very open to everyone, male, female, non-binary, anyone who menstruates, even people who don't. If you're just interested in learning more, please come and join the conversation and
absolutely
just hop on in.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been really, I learned a lot researching for this episode. And that's a thing. It's like, it's, that's where we start, I think, you know, is that it is something to learn about, and it's something to learn about, and it's really interesting and not scary. Oh, yeah, if sure. We just really look at, I mean, the science, the experience of it, it's not this demonized thing. And absolutely, I think that it all comes back to, again, just like cultural biases that exist for no other reason than socialization of what it means to be a person that menstruates. And I just think that this is really important. And I think it's really the basics of
fundamental part of sex education. So I really appreciate you coming on. Okay, I'm gonna stop the recording, but
thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psych and the City. I'm your host, Sarah Kelleher, and I interviewed Tabitha, who you can find on Instagram at @_prophetess, PROPHETESS. You can find me on Instagram at @PsychandTheCityBK. I also started doing some TikToks at @PsychandTheCityBK on TikTok as well. Some resources that we mentioned that are in the show notes and also during the episode are allianceforperiodsupplies.org, periodaction.org. There's a few listed in the show notes that are specific to New York City. There are so many books and resources all online that I will be listing and posting about. And this episode was really meant to just scratch the surface and provided basic information. We could not expand on every topic related to period, bleeding, menstruation. There's just so much to cover and honestly could not do it justice via one episode. So do your research. I hope this inspired you to learn and search a little bit more on your own. And thanks so much for listening. Oh, one more thing. I am going to be starting another podcast called Talking to My Friends About Sex. It will be a little bit more casual, a little bit more personal, and it's going to be friends talking about sex and sharing information to help us ease shame that a lot of us feel about our sex lives. I'm going to start recording that and releasing it in November, so look out for that. Thanks.